I'll be reading from Mark chapter 3. Another time, Jesus went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Stand up in front of everyone." Then Jesus asked them, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" But they remained silent. He looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts, said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus.
Well, I'm pleased to have with me Mark Bauer, who's going to be co-preaching with me this morning. Mark and Courtney, they've been partners here at Southside for several years now. Mark teaches at Fort Worth Christian School in the Bible department there, and he co-preached with me last year, did a great job, and so I'm glad that you're with me again, Mark.
Good to be here.
When was the last time that you got angry, and what did you do? I recently read an article about different things that we do to express our anger. Most of these are not good things. Sometimes when we get angry, we cry. We become overcome with the emotion of anger, and that produces sadness. Sometimes we destroy things. Maybe you've done that before. Punch a wall, break a chair, kick the dog. Something to just get out that anger or emotion in some form. We say hurtful things. It's amazing that when we have that intense emotion of anger, things can come out of our mouth that we never thought we would ever say. And then in some cases, we can do other things to express our anger. And these are negative things. And anger is a God-given emotion. It's nothing wrong to be angry. We're going to get angry from time to time. That's a part of human life. The question is, how can I handle my anger? What should I be doing when I get angry to handle it in a proper way?
What's challenging about this topic is that we're living in a culture in which outspoken anger has never been more socially acceptable. So I know that's not everybody in this room, but a lot of people in this room, when you get angry, you want everybody around you to know it, to express your anger clearly and allow others to feel it as well. And so right now, I mean, with things like social media, you could instantaneously, publicly, in front of the whole world without any filter, express your anger and rage and frustration, and everybody can hear it at a moment's notice. That's a powerful tool. Even the news media now realizes that getting people outraged gets a lot of views and a lot of clicks. So in this world in which there's so much anger being spoken, how are we responding? Well, for a lot of us, we feel this righteous indignation. It's kind of like a drug. You can get addicted to it, to be outraged at something, to see injustice, and to say, "Man, oh, how dare they?" Like that, there's some part of us that feels good. And the way we justify it, even as Christians, when we try to justify our anger, we justify it by saying, they deserve my criticism, they deserve my anger because they are so unrighteous, because this is so unjust, therefore my righteous indignation is absolutely justified. That's what we're doing every single time we're allowing ourselves to say, "Man, I can be angry at this person because they are just a piece of garbage."
On the other hand, there are some of us that when we feel anger, instead of spewing the hatred that Mark was talking about, we suppress it. Maybe this is the kind of person you are. When you get angry, you just kind of push it down inside and ignore it, hope that it goes away, definitely not have any sort of confrontation about the situation. I like to watch the Andy Griffith Show. Anybody remember that show from years ago? And there's a funny Andy Griffith episode where Barney, the deputy of Andy, wants to sing in the community choir. The only problem is that Barney can't sing, at least not very well. He thinks he can, but he actually can't sing very well at all. Well, instead of having a conversation with Barney and just trying to explain how you're not a very good fit for the community choir, the whole episode is about all the different ways they try to circumvent Barney ruining the choir. So, for example, they change the practice times of the choir and don't tell Barney. Or then later they try to convince Barney, you know, you would do better if you would just read a poem while the choir is singing its number. And then finally at the end they decide to let Barney sing a solo, but they have somebody in the back singing into a live microphone while Barney's singing into a dead microphone. So it looks like he's singing, but actually you're hearing somebody's voice. Well, the whole episode wouldn't even need to happen if someone would have confronted Barney and said, okay, let's have an honest conversation about the situation. But many times, that's the way we go about life. We get angry with someone, we get enraged at someone, but instead of dealing with it, we stuff it down inside, we push it down, we hope that it goes away, we don't confront the issue. And that results often in one of two things. Number one, what ends up happening is we resent that person that we're angry with. We avoid them. We give them the silent treatment. We try to get away from them. Or the other thing that happens is we stuff that anger down for so long that eventually it just explodes in something that is completely terrible. Both of these things are negative.
And that's what's interesting about this is if we think about the emotion of anger, everybody in this room will handle that emotion differently. Some of us are more prone to take a step back and or to silence ourselves or to walk away. Some of us are more prone to engage and speak our mind. But this anger kind of manifests itself differently depending on the type of person you are. The person sitting next to you likely deals with their anger very differently than you do. One of the classes I teach at our high school is a comparative religion course. We offer it to all of our 12th graders. And in this course, we talk about how do different worldviews talk to each other? What do they believe? And one of the first visuals that we use in this class, I introduce my students to this little graph. And if you're looking at it, this is generally meant to show this kind of response we have whenever we realize we disagree with someone. So imagine you have a friend, you've built a friendship, but then you realize that your worldview or your religion or your morality is diametrically opposed to their morality. So what do you do in that scenario? You've got two people with fundamental differences. In that moment, in that relationship, what are you going to do? Now, some of the people in this room, depending on personality, background, depending on your confidence level maybe, you're more the type on the right side of the screen. If you were in conflict with someone, if you disagreed with their lifestyle, their decisions, their morality, their religion, you're gonna just retreat. You think, I don't want to offend them. I don't want to make things awkward in our friendship, so I think I'll just back away. Or maybe I just don't care enough about this issue. I'm just gonna stay silent. I'll pull back and not say anything. Now, others of us in this same scenario will fall more on the left side. You're more than happy to tell somebody how stupid they are. They are so foolish. Are you kidding me? You're choosing to live that way? Do you realize what that means? Do you realize how awful that is? Do you realize what the consequences are? And it's hostility. It's pride. And the reason I wanted to throw this up here for just a moment is because we should not be comfortable where we're at right now. We all need to be pushing towards the middle. If you fall on the left side or the right side, you need to be pushing towards this response to other people's opinions and worldviews to the point where you can speak to them with confidence, but with humility. Being able to articulate what you believe, why you believe it, why you're passionate about it. But and the reason I give this middle way as the way we need to move towards is because I believe that's the way that Jesus lived his life. Throughout the Gospels, Jesus is speaking to people truth. He's speaking with confidence, humility. He's doing this all in love. And time after time, it's the example he gives us. And so we need to follow after it, especially in these moments where Jesus himself gets angry.
And the question that Mark and I want us to talk about is, okay, how can we, when we get angry, how can we, on the one hand, not spew hatred, and on the other hand, not suppress it, push it down, and go into retreat and silence, but instead channel this anger into something that is positive? In Mark chapter 3, we have this story where Jesus goes into the synagogue, and there is this man who has a shriveled arm or a shriveled hand. And the situation isn't life-threatening, but it definitely is a problem because this man, because of the situation, he's unable to work with two hands. Because of that, he's disabled. Because of that, he can't provide for himself and for his family. So he's in a difficult, hard situation. And certainly, naturally, we would expect that Jesus would have compassion on this man and would heal him. But here's the issue, the real problem. It's that the Pharisees have positioned this man, they've positioned this man there in the synagogue on the Sabbath day to see what Jesus is going to do about this man. They're not concerned about the man. They don't have any compassion towards him. All they're concerned about is what is Jesus going to do on the Sabbath day with this man. Really, this man is, they're treating him like an object. They're treating him like a pawn that they're just using to put in a certain place to see if they can trap Jesus over breaking their Sabbath traditions and rules. And Jesus recognizes that. He sees their hypocritical spirit that is more concerned about their silly man-made traditions than they are about a man who is truly in need. And when he sees that, Jesus gets angry. Notice what it says in chapter 3, verse 5. He looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts. Jesus sees that they are being hypocrites in this moment, and he gets angry. But the question is, what does Jesus do with that anger?
The very first thing we need to notice in this text is that Jesus does not retreat. So, I mean, verse 3 could have just as easily said, and Jesus got angry and walked away. But it doesn't say that. Jesus walks into this mess. Like Steve just said, this is an abusive situation. You've got incredible injustice going on here. You've got him flaring up in anger. And what does that cause him to do? It causes him to speak out, to confront the situation. He's not going to let it go by without saying something. It would be unrighteous to do that. And so instead, Jesus walks into it. But notice how he doesn't just start giving him a sermon on loving others well. I mean, he does this creatively. Notice verse 4. My version in verse 4 has got this powerful question. And he said to them, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill? I mean, that's powerful and that's creative because it's forcing all of the Pharisees in this scenario to step back and look at their motivations again. Like, do you realize what you're doing? Do you realize what you're saying? You bring this man in front of me and you're asking me either to ignore him or to help him, and either way I'm trapped. But in this scenario, this person that's standing in front of him, he is the victim, and Jesus is forcing everybody to acknowledge that. This is a handicapped man who stands in front of us, and you don't want me to help him? I mean, really what Jesus is doing, just by this one question, Jesus is saying, what's the more important law to follow? Is it the legalism of the Sabbath that you're going to follow, or are you going to love your neighbor? I mean, that's awesome. Like Jesus, in this conflict, he forces them to question their values and their motivations, and he forces them to say which of these laws is most important, who's the victim in this scenario, and what do you think you're doing with this man? And you, when you're running through this, you're actually seeing this constantly throughout the Gospel of Mark. I would highly encourage you, spend the next week. If you haven't done it in a while, read back through Mark. It's the shortest gospel. One of the things you're going to notice, you're going to find four other times besides this one in which Jesus is actively confronting the Pharisees and speaking words of truth to them so as to show them their own hypocrisy. He needs to tell them the ways in which they're wrong. To not say anything would be unloving, and so Jesus is not going to do that. Same thing actually in Matthew 23. We go there, we have this section that we call the seven woes. Matthew 23 is just seven warnings that Jesus is giving to these guys. Do you realize how hypocritical you're being? Do you realize how hard your hearts are? Jesus needs to tell them these truths in order to confront them. And you see this time after time. He doesn't retreat, he walks into it, and he tries his best to speak to their heart.
And the question is, how could Jesus do that? How could Jesus have such anger towards a group of people and not vent about it on social media and be enraged in that way, and then at the same time not like walk away, but instead to engage in these conversations of truth? And I think that the reason why Jesus could do that, he could channel his anger in that way, is because fundamentally Jesus was for the Pharisees. And sometimes we forget that. We know Jesus was for the leper, and Jesus was for the lame man, and Jesus was for the paralytic, and Jesus was for the child, but he also was for the Pharisees. He spent time in their homes. He went to their synagogues. He sat around the table with them. He engaged in conversations with them, not simply to try to stir up trouble, but because he loved them. And because he loved them, he couldn't let them continue in their hypocritical ways without calling them on it and inviting them to a different way of life. He was for those Pharisees. Paul Miller, in his book, says that Jesus was the true peacemaker and the false peace breaker. I think he's right. That Jesus was not one to be good with false peace. A lot of times we are. We're okay if there's this artificial feeling of peace within a relationship, even though there might be this big elephant in the room. Oh, as long as we don't talk about that elephant, everything's okay. Jesus didn't like that. If there was an elephant in the room, Jesus was going to bring it up, because he didn't want false peace. And that's what's going on here with the Pharisees. He doesn't want there to be a false peace between him and the religious leaders. And because he loves them, he speaks truth to them that they need to hear, and he does that with grace.
And those two words is really what all of this hangs on. If you want to meditate on two words today out of this passage, it's those words, grace and truth. We actually find these words all over the New Testament, and they're always side by side, it seems. Grace and truth. Jesus himself is described many times as someone who has come from the Father full of grace and truth. And when you have these two characteristics, when you're striving to be both of these things, one of the main things I hope you take away from today is that you need them side by side. It does you very little good to have one without the other. I'm going to say that again just so it sinks in. You have to have grace right next to truth and truth right next to grace, or this whole thing falls apart. You are not acting like Christ if you only have one of the two. I mean, think about this for a moment. Let's say you've got a next door neighbor that you have spent the last 20 years showing grace to, but you have never spoken the truth to them. That is not love. Or flip it around. You've got a neighbor that you've spent 20 years telling really hard truths to them, but you have never taken the time to show them any grace. That's not love. You need these side by side in your heart, in your mind, and allow the Spirit to bring your angry thoughts back to love. That is what grace and truth looks like, and that's what the example Jesus gave us. If they're not together, things fall apart. I really like, there's a preacher out of Nashville named Scott Sauls, and the way he phrases it is this. He says, truth without grace is religious bullying. Grace without truth is codependent enablement. Just let that sink in for a moment. Is it really love if you're allowing your anger to speak out in truth at somebody, but there is no grace, there is no empathy, there's no humility in what you're saying to them? You got truth, yeah, no grace. Or again, if you speak to somebody words of grace and yet never confront them on something they need to hear. You know what they're doing is wrong. It might hurt them, but you say nothing. It's not grace. That's not what Jesus is doing in Mark chapter 3.
You know, Mark, as I've thought about this, you know, there are people in my life that I think that they speak truth to me, but I'm not exactly sure if they're for me. And then there are some people who I think they're for me, but I'm not exactly sure if they speak truth to me. But it's the people that I truly love are the people who I know are for me and who I know are willing to speak truth to me. I want more people like that in my life, don't you? Because those are people that I know that if they get angry with me, they're going to love me enough not to spew hatred towards me and not to just keep it inside and act like it's not there, but instead to actually sit down with me and in love and in grace offer words of truth to me. That's loving like Jesus, folks. That's what Jesus does in Mark 3, and that's what we need to do to one another. But I need to issue a couple caveats. This doesn't give anybody license to start going around correcting everyone. That's a sign of judgmentalism. Jesus is very clear in the Sermon on the Mount that before you start picking out the speck in someone else's eye, you're to do what? Check out the plank in your own eye. And maybe that's a really good step, that whenever we get angry, the first thing we should do is to stop and self-reflect. Why am I angry? What's going on in my life that would bring about this emotion? Why am I feeling this? And then once I have reflected upon myself, then that gives me the space and the grace to then to have that conversation of truth with the one I'm angry with. But secondly, just because I speak words of truth in grace to someone doesn't mean they're always going to receive them well. Jesus spoke a lot of words of truth to the Pharisees, and the Pharisees did not receive them well, right? They decided, it says at the end of the story, to go out and plan to kill him. But when I speak words of truth, my job is not to make sure that the other person understands what I'm saying. My job is not to make sure that the other person is seeing things the way I see them. That's not my job. My job is to speak truth and grace to that person. That's my job. And when I'm doing that, that's when I'm loving someone like Jesus.
I'm convinced that our ability to live this out hinges entirely on how we view one another. Like Steve was saying earlier, in the story of Matthew 3, or Mark chapter 3, the reason this is so messed up is because the Pharisees have taken a man, a handicapped man, and has used him as an object, as a weapon, as a tool to trap Jesus. Everything about that is so incredibly wrong. But please hear me. I mean, all it takes is for you to view someone as less than human, for you to justify any anger you have towards them. To view somebody as an object or an enemy or an obstacle, whether that's somebody in this room or somebody outside of it. The most powerful thing about this story to me is Jesus' ability to see the woundedness in everybody, not just the handicapped man. Yeah, he's a victim. He's a pawn. He's wounded. But so are all these hard-hearted Pharisees. He registers their lostness, and he sees that everybody in this scenario desperately needs a Savior. Please allow that to shape the way you see other people. And I want us to pause for a moment. We got a little audience participation. I know I'm not going to ask anybody to come up, but I'm asking you right now where you're at, to follow through on what Steve asked at the very beginning. I want you to think back to the last time you got very angry at somebody. This might have been days ago, weeks ago, for some of you, hours ago. Something bad happened this morning. I'm talking really angry at another human being, okay? I want you to think, remember, have this person in your mind, and then I want you to ask yourself this question. In my anger towards them, did I acknowledge their woundedness? Was my frustration acknowledging their brokenness? Or to phrase it another way, what in the midst of my anger, was I still for them? Was I showing them grace in the truth? Or was I showing them truth within my grace? Was that what my anger looked like? I'm not going to take a show of hands. I'm going to assume the majority of us, myself included, had to answer no to that question. And if you answered no, we've got some work to do, okay? If we're going to love like the Master loved, we've got to take every thought captive, every angry impulse, and scrutinize it and make sure that all of our anger is fueled by a love and a grace towards our fellow men, to recognize them as wounded and broken and to say, I want my heart to be like Jesus's, and I want every angry impulse I have to be directed back towards speaking truth and grace towards other people. That's the heart of this story. That's the heart of the gospel. That's the heart of Jesus. And we should be wanting to be like him in every facet, especially this one.
And maybe you came this morning and you are angry. Angry at some person, angry in a relationship. Maybe there's just been this anger beneath the surface in your life for several days, several weeks. And if you came here this morning and you're in that situation, I want you to know that I prayed for you this morning. I prayed for you that you would hear the words of Jesus and see the actions of Jesus, and you would allow that to shape the feelings of anger that you have right now, that you would allow them to be channeled into speaking words of truth and grace. And the first step to doing that is giving it to God, as I mentioned, doing that self-reflection and giving it to God. And there's some of us who are angry and we're not handling it well, and we need to give it to God. We need to turn over to Him. And we're going to have elders and ministers surround this auditorium in just a moment. And I'd encourage you to walk to one of them and just say, I've got a little situation in my life. I need prayer to help me know how to handle it. You don't have to go into the details, but just let them pray over you, that you can handle this anger in the right way, in a God-honoring way. Or maybe you're ready to become a Christian, to repent of your sins, be baptized into Christ. The way of Jesus is not a way of anger or meanness. It's a way of love and grace and hope. And we'd love to welcome you to God's family and let God change you by His Spirit. If we can help you this morning with anger, please come now. Together we stand and sing.